Welcome to Finding Proof, where we discuss all things early stage VC.
We're your hosts, Thanasis and Jenny of the Proof Fund, and our goal is to get to know the best seed and early stage VCs out there. Today, we're speaking with Alex Melamatinas, who is a founder and managing partner of Melitas Ventures, which is a food and beverage focused early stage VC based in New York. Alex, thanks so much for joining us today. We're really looking forward to the conversation. So to kick it off, why don't you tell us a little bit about Melitas Ventures?
Thanks, Jenny. It's great to be here. So Melitas Ventures is a New York-based venture capital fund that invests in innovative food and beverage companies through the value chain. Our focus is better-for-you branded products. In fact, Melitas derives from the Latin meaning of better-for-you opportunities, so it's at the core of our mission.
And I love that you bring up the name because we inevitably always ask about that. And so what was the rationale behind focusing on food and beverage?
So food and beverage, firstly, is a space that I'm passionate about. I grew up in a European household where food and beverage was a key focus area. My career, I was investing at a couple of large New York-based hedge funds in the large publicly traded food and beverage companies. And what I noticed was this move towards early stage innovative companies that are really attracting the attention of consumers that are looking for healthier products with authentic branding. And ultimately, the large publicly traded companies becoming very aware of this. And so in some sense, outsourcing their R&D function by actively acquiring some of these companies. So I was able to combine my passion for food and beverage and entrepreneurship and launch a fund very focused on this opportunity set.
And as you had mentioned, having an authentic brand is so important in this space. What are the keys in terms of making sure that you develop an authentic brand and you're able to communicate that well to consumers?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think firstly, the idea of the brand has to be genuine as a starting point. So that's often a founder that started a product because he or she had a certain health issue or couldn't find this product on the shelves. And then having a brand name and perhaps even more importantly, messaging that supports that. And I think consumers today can really pick up on that. And I think speaking to them in an authentic manner with words and messages that they can relate to, I think is very powerful.
Talk to us a little bit about the trends that you're seeing beyond what you just briefly discussed in food and beverage. There's been a lot of startups in the last few years and increasing focus of investing in these companies. So what do you think drives that?
Yeah, so taking a step back, venture capital as an asset class, I think, has become increasingly more sophisticated and continues to follow that trend. I think there's more and more innovation that's coming from these founders in the early stage. Initially, it was very much just technology. Now we're seeing more capital going towards consumer, and in our case, specifically food and beverage. So again, our focus being better for you branded products. And within that, there's certain categories, which I can touch on that we're focused on. But there's also now the intersection of technology and food. So food tech being a very important area.
Talk to us about some of those categories that you think are driving this trend.
Sure. So within Better For You, an area that's getting a lot of attention that we're also focused on is plant-based. Clearly, we've seen the success that Impossible and Beyond have had. We think this is still early innings. And right now, there's a move towards arguably healthier ingredients, more natural, clean label, and also better tasting. So there's a big move in plant-based. And this is the space that we're focused on through our second fund. Gut health is another area that's getting the attention of consumers. So the use of prebiotics and probiotics. We've got an investment in a company called Olipop. That's a great tasting product that offers these prebiotics. And so what we're seeing is that consumers today, maybe I'm exaggerating, but they want everything, right? They want a healthy product that's great tasting, that has some functional benefits. So those are a couple of examples within food and beverage. Within food tech, we're seeing a lot of opportunities there as well, because when you look at food and beverage, it's one of the more perhaps antiquated industries. And so we're seeing technology being applied to the supply chain to make that more efficient. We're seeing technology being applied to delivery. There's some delivery companies that have already got very high valuations that are publicly traded, such as Deliveroo, for an example. Yeah, we're seeing other technologies being applied to restaurants and quick service restaurants to improve efficiencies there. We have an investment in a company called PreciTaste that helps improve the reordering of food and ingredients for QSRs. So those are some examples.
Historically, it has been difficult to break into the mainstream for a new brand or a new food product. Do you think that the technologies that have come about, like mobile and social and things like that, have changed that dynamic by allowing companies to go direct to consumers? Or how do you think about scaling a new brand?
Absolutely. So 20, 30 years ago, it was really just the large publicly traded food and beverage companies that had the ability to advertise their products to consumers, primarily over TV, but other channels as well. And so the rise of social media, specifically Facebook and Instagram, really gave the opportunity for any founder to develop a product and then advertise this product or market this product to consumers. And that's been a game changer. Obviously, right now, there's a lot of brands or many brands marketing their products on Facebook and Instagram. So that's resulted in higher customer acquisition costs. And so brands are looking to diversify from Facebook and Instagram, let's say, as an example, but there's other social media channels. And then I think another important point is that today, these companies, these brands can outsource not just their marketing functions, but more importantly, supply chain and production, which is allowing these companies to scale more efficiently.
Looking forward, what does the future of food and beverage look like in food tech?
Generally speaking, my hope and our aspiration is that consumers will have more healthy products available to them that are also great tasting. So from a product standpoint, I think that's something that we'd like to see. I think that the most consumers would like to see, and I think the large companies would agree. Specifically, a food tech perspective, I think you're just going to see continued improvements again in digital applications to the supply chain, to distribution, to delivery. And so I think we're going to see a much more efficient and automated process. And I think consumers will benefit. I think restaurants will benefit. QSRs will benefit.
Have you seen any space food deals?
Space food. That's interesting. It's the first time I've heard that. Not yet. But I'm sure we will.
So have you ever tried that? It's actually quite awful. I know that it's supposed to be branded as good, but I don't know if you guys tried it. It's pretty bad. But I feel like space food, if we're flying out there, it's going to happen soon, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think as we're taking commercial trips to the moon and Mars, I mean, people will need to be consuming products.
Everyone needs snacks.
Shelf
no
stable.
Matter where you are.
Shelf stable.
Exactly.
So Alex, talk to us a little bit about your background. You mentioned you worked in hedge fund, which is kind of a non-traditional path to go into venture. Usually people that work in hedge fund have stayed there, but recently a lot more people have started investing from hedge funds into venture. So talk to us a little bit about your journey through that and then your background.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So I grew up in a European household, Greek father, Dutch mother, born in Switzerland, and then was raised in London. And then came to the US 20 years ago for my undergrad. I went to Stanford. And then, as you point out, I began my career in financial services. So started out at Morgan Stanley, went to business school, and then was a global consumer investor in the hedge fund industry in New York. And so that's my training, so to speak, investing in companies, and predominantly it was large publicly traded companies. On the side, I was always very passionate about helping entrepreneurs, writing small angel checks, offering them my advice. And so to your point, I guess the non-traditional route, but from the hedge fund industry, I launched our venture capital fund. So it's been a great ride because I love investing and I love working with founders. So I'm able to combine those two. And as you point out, we've seen the Tiger Globals of the world, we've seen large hedge funds investing in the space, and we'll continue to see that, I think. And it really supports all the innovation that's happening in the early stage.
And you mentioned that you focused globally when you were working in the hedge fund industry. Is that perspective important, do you think, for food and beverage? You grew up overseas. So how do you use that global perspective when you invest?
I'm biased, of course, but I think it's always helpful to have a global perspective. So from a starting point, just understanding what different cultures are looking for, what consumers are looking for, having an understanding of what the large publicly multinational companies are focused on. But specifically for Mellitus, given that we're focused on the early stage, we're typically focusing on companies that are US-based, since there's a lot of potential for these companies to scale within the US, and then at a certain point, either be acquired and or then decide to embark on global expansion.
And how did you meet your partners?
So one of my partners I actually met when I began my career at Morgan Stanley in 2005. And the other partner was an advisor of mine, Jacques. He was a partner at McKinsey for 10 plus years. And then he was initially advising Daniel Obetsky, the founder of Kind, and joined him full time to scale the company, which was successfully sold to Mars. So I met Jacques just as he had stepped down from that. He started off as an advisor and now is an operating partner. So I've known my partners for quite some time, for several years, and we're a very close group.
Is there an example portfolio company? Maybe you can walk us through the story and what prompted you to invest and what was your thesis and how has it worked out?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're always looking for innovative companies and we're identifying certain specific categories and subcategories. And so coffee is obviously a very large category and will continue to be an important product for millions of people. With that said, there's a specific customer demographic that's dissatisfied with coffee and is seeking an alternative. So specifically, this customer doesn't want the jitters, doesn't want the rise and fall that one experiences with coffee. And so identifying that trend, we found a company called Mudwater. Mudwater is a plant-based coffee alternative that ships in a tin and offers consumers this powdered form that when mixed with hot water is like an alternative to coffee. And because it uses healthy ingredients, mushroom-based ingredients, it gives consumers a steady rise in energy without any of the jitters. And so we identified this company as innovative in terms of its branding, its messaging, the product itself. Clearly very talented founders who built a very successful digital marketing strategy. So we led the seed round a couple of years ago. We then led a follow-on round and the company is now just closed a very successful larger Series A round.
That's great. I actually love the company. I'm a consumer. So that's a great example.
Yeah, we both are. It's delicious.
Great. Yeah. Good to hear.
And so you wrote a blog post recently on the importance of investing in health. You want to talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think key problem that we face, particularly in the US, is increasing number of people suffering from obesity and diabetes and ultimately food be thy medicine. It's important that we consume healthy foods in order to avoid diseases like that and also just to have a better lifestyle. So for us, again, it's very much the core of our mission to help these companies build their companies and offer better for you products to America and ultimately the world.
I noticed that Magic Spoon was in your portfolio and I'm a huge fan. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that story and how the company's doing?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of the company and the products as well. As you know, cereal is a very large category and for decades, consumers have really been consuming more or less the same brands, the same products. great tasting products, but perhaps sugar is too high and not the healthiest that consumers could consume. So Magic Spoon has introduced a product that's great tasting, but healthier for you. And so very low in sugar, high in protein. And to date, the brand has sold all its cereal online and primarily through its own website. I met Gabby, one of the co-founders, several years ago. And just as he was launching the company with Greg, we got very excited about the innovation that they were introducing to the cereal category and the fact that they were building this engagement with customers exclusively online. So we've now invested in every round and the company has become very successful. One thing that we've experienced with Magic Spoon, as well as with some other portfolio companies, is that the tailwinds for e-commerce direct to consumer have really only accelerated during COVID, and consumers have discovered the convenience of using this as a delivery mechanism.
Talk to us a little bit more about that and what your advice has been to your portfolio companies specifically during the COVID period.
Sure. So one of the buzzwords today in the industry is omnichannel, right? So I think ultimately for a brand to be successful at a certain stage, the brand needs to be present everywhere, so to speak. So specifically on the shelves in retail, as well as online. With that said, when a company is starting off, we're advising them to choose one or the other. And so for many of these, like a Magic Spoon, like Mudwater, like Verb, they've started exclusively online and through their website. And it has really allowed them to scale very quickly and efficiently. And then at a certain point, perhaps it makes sense to move to retail. For other businesses, like beverage, for instance, like Lemon Perfect, these are inherently more suited to retail. So that wouldn't apply as much.
So if somebody's starting from zero today, what are some of the tactics that people use to hack themselves into some kind of growth or scale if you're just getting started from nothing and it's a brand that is unknown?
Firstly, you need a great product. You need a product that people want, that people need. And then the second challenge is how do you market the product? And so digital marketing, I think, is a challenging landscape these days. It's ever changing. And so companies that take a unique approach, whether it's somehow getting the word of mouth out there, whether it's using influencers, different social media channels, be it TikTok instead of, let's say, Facebook and Instagram. So there's not one prescribed formula, but there's certainly having to take an innovative approach.
Similar to the story that you had with Mudwater in terms of looking at the market, a need in the market, then finding Mudwater who had created a solution around that. What are some other products that you're actively seeking?
A space that I alluded to is functional food and beverage, right? So consumers today want a great tasting product that's also good for them. And with COVID-19, it's actually increased levels of general anxiety. And so consumers are seeking out products, both food, beverage, as well as supplements that help them calm down and or sleep. And so another company that we're invested in is a beverage company called Elements. The founder of Loci, successful bracelet company, Steven Eisen, has built Elements. We've partnered with him to help scale the company. And so two of their key products, one is a calming drink and one is a sleep drink. And it does this in a healthy way using adaptogens, which are plant-based, to effectively, again, help customers calm down and go to sleep.
What is your current vice with food, like the worst food that you like to eat that you would like to see a better alternative for? Highly personal question.
Yeah, no. And it goes very personal because my father was the global CEO of Burger King.
Okay.
And he's now actually one of our advisors. And so I think comes from an old school food world that very much understands and appreciates the trends towards better for you. So I love a good old fashioned hamburger.
With cheese or without cheese?
With cheese, okay. Which I guess makes it less healthy. But today you can have an Impossible Burger. You can have a Beyond Burger. you can have plant-based cheese. Loka is a company which we know, which is not one of our portfolio companies, but I think they have a great product. So you can have that burger in a much healthier way. Is it as good tasting as the meat burger with dairy cheese? No, but I think we're getting there. We're on the path, and there are companies that are introducing healthier and better tasting plant-based meat alternatives. In fact, one of our portfolio companies, Abbott's Butcher, is one that I think has a great product, really great tasting and very healthy ingredients.
And what is one food that you have become aware of, either in your portfolio or outside, that you think is very exciting and people should know about and try?
Yeah, so I'm biased. I think there's a few that I like, but we talked about healthy snacking, right? So increasingly we're all busy and we're either at our desks or moving around. And there's a lot of bars out there. There's a lot of bars that you can buy on the shelves. Some of them you can order. Obviously Kind has had tremendous success. One product that I love, and I think many consumers do as well, is Verb Energy. So Verb is a smaller bar. You get the same amount of caffeine as you do from an espresso shot. Again, it's all healthy ingredients. The caffeine comes from a green leaf, and you can order the product over text messaging. So you develop a certain friendship with the brand, and they message you on a monthly basis to ask you if you want your delivery for the month and if you want to add any products.
And is that a meal replacement bar, or is this like an added energy boost?
Yeah, it's really more of a snack, and it could be a coffee replacement of sorts. It could replace your morning coffee or your afternoon coffee.
How many of those do you have a day? That's my problem, is when they're small, it's like a snackable. You're not,
right.
I'm sure you're,
you
that,
have,
you're not like
you have
meaning for you to have 10. Yeah.
Well, and some people do, right? You know, it depends on your how much caffeine intake you can have, but I'll sometimes consume two or three a day.
That's great.
Is there a better alternative to Nutella?
Interestingly enough, I mean, I grew up consuming Nutella in European household, and it's, I think, obviously great tasting product, but not very healthy for you given the amount of sugar there is. And so, yes, today we're actually speaking with a couple of brands that are introducing healthier for you Nutella. So jury's still out.
That is awesome.
Happy to.
I would sign up for that. Let us know.
Yeah,
Jenny
I know.
And
seriously.
I
are... Yeah.
We'll
we will definitely stock that at our
growing,
offices.
Growing up in Europe too, I think there's Nutella in our kitchen for sure.
And did you actively seek that out to find the better for you Nutellas, or did they come to you?
They came to us, fortunately, because we've invested in several successful companies in the space. We're seeing a lot of inbound deal flow. So in this case, it came to us. When we look at these opportunities, of course, the product and the founder are arguably two of the most important elements. But beyond that, we're also looking at market sizing and potential for these companies to scale. So obviously, Nutella itself is a large brand. But when we're looking at companies, we're thinking beyond maybe that specific product.
Great.
What if there was crunchy Nutella? Does that exist?
I bet it does. I don't know. You would just remove the water content, I guess, or whatever, the oil content. Yes, it's called fudge. It's called fudge. I don't
know. Are you guys crunchy peanut butter people or smooth?
I'm a smooth.
I'm actually not a peanut butter person. So, and again, I think it goes back to growing up in Europe. It's not as popular. I mean, I know it's one of the staples in the US.
Yeah, I literally grew up on it. Shout out to my mom for all the PBJs.
And it's healthier, right? I mean, it has a lot of protein.
Right. Definitely healthier than Nutella.
Yeah. Just you're not supposed to be eating it with a spoon, which is what people shouldn't do, like myself.
At 11 p.m. Right.
Exactly. Right. As one does.
As one does. Okay. At this point, we're going to switch to our standard questions in an attempt to get to know you better. So the first question is our NVCA question. The National Venture Capital Association advocates for public policy that supports the venture community and the American entrepreneurial ecosystem. So if there's one thing that you would change about the venture capital industry or one policy that you would advocate for, what would it be?
Yeah, so I'm supportive of policies to attract the world's best entrepreneurs to the U.S. to ensure that the U.S. maintains its competitive position globally. So as an example, I'd support the creation of a startup visa that offers a separate visa category for immigrant entrepreneurs.
That's great. And that's something we've talked about with other guests. And I think it's absolutely true that a lot of the startups that you see currently, I mean, the Indian community, for example, has created so much opportunity in the States. And so you want to take advantage of that and continue. Second question, if you were not a VC investor and money was not a concern, what career would you have?
Good question. So I actually love what I do. And so if I weren't managing a venture capital fund, I would find some way to work with founders. And so whether that's that hypothetical situation, investing my own money and or advising founders, that's what I would be doing every day.
Great. Who is someone you look up to and why?
Michael Jordan. So he was my idol growing up, consistent high level of performance, inspirational leader, inspired his team to be better and always led by example.
Have you watched The Last Dance?
I have. Brought back many memories from the 90s.
Yeah, of course. What is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
I was very fortunate to have Steve Jobs as my graduation speaker from Stanford in 2005. And as part of his speech, one of his core pieces of advice was, you've got to find what you love. And honestly, for me, it took me a decade or so to find it. But now I feel that I found it and the advice really hits home.
So that's a great speech.
It is a great speech.
One of the staples on YouTube.
Yeah.
Well, Alex, thanks for joining us today. This was a lot of fun and we look forward to doing it again soon.
Great. Thanks for having me.
And follow us on Twitter @ProofVC or on our website @proof.vc. Thank you.